Over the course of the last few weeks, we've been talking about family, and we've been looking at it in various aspects. And the last 2 weeks, we've specifically been looking at marriage. And if we were exact, 2 weeks ago, we really looked at what marriage was not. And if you'll remember what we said, that marriage is not living together. Marriage is not cohabiting. No matter how much you love the person, that's not what it is. It's not the way God designed it. And so last week, we began to look at what marriage is. And we started with, for me, what was a very transforming message for me, and that was that marriage is friendship, because we really don't think much about marriage as friendship. We think about the ideas of commitment and covenant, but we really don't think that much about being friends. But as we said last week, when the kids are grown and gone, you've got each other to look at. Do you still, you may not, the feelings, that blazing feeling that you might have had when you first got married may not be, you know, may not be quite as, the fires may not be reaching quite as high. But if over the course of your marriage you've developed a friendship, a true friendship that's not just shoulder to shoulder, but it's heart to heart. If you develop that kind of friendship, it's something that can last even when the kids are gone, no matter what it is that life may bring to you. And let me tell you, folks, life is going to bring some rough things your way. There are many couples in here who have gone through some very, very difficult times where illness had come in, either in the family, their husband or wife, or in the children, or they've lost a child. Or perhaps they're having to dealing with aging parents and those issues that come along with that. Or dealing with aging themselves. I've noticed that there's some things that come along with aging. I used to be able to keep up with my son. It's not that he's gotten faster at 19 years old. I've gotten slower. I'm still limping around on a left knee, and I don't know what's wrong with it. I'm afraid to go to the doctor, actually, because he's going to probably tell me two things. Jimmy, you're too old to do that. And secondly, we need to get an MRI, neither of which I want to hear. But today we want to pick up with this idea of marriage, and we want to move. And I've got three themes, and you go, how are you going to cover three themes? We're going to do this, and we're going to do it well, thoroughly, but we're going to do it briefly. But we want to look at marriage. Marriage is a commitment. Marriage is a covenant. Marriage is a witness. We've got a lot of ground to cover, so let's begin with marriage is a commitment. What you're going to say is, isn't that obvious? Marriage is a commitment. After all, part of the vows that we exchange, wasn't it till death do us part? That should be a no-brainer, a dead giveaway. Marriage is more than an experience. It is an experience. Any of you that have been through a wedding, you know it's an experience. It's a huge, huge, many times a huge gala. Takes a lot of months of preparation, and for most marriages, not all, but takes a lot of months of preparation. So much goes into that big day, that big ceremony. But marriage is more than the ceremony. It's more than the cake and the rings and the dress and the church or the flowers and all those things. Marriage is two people making a serious, sober, thoughtful decision to commit to one another for life. Or at least that's what it ought to be. And I think that's what most people intended to be. I read about one couple that was so intent on emphasizing the commitment part of their marriage that they did something unique. I think it's a pretty good idea. They had a large document drawn up that expressed the vows that they were making with each other. Then at the end of the ceremony, they signed the document. They did something more. Then they had, during the reception, the friends and family, the guests who attended the ceremony, had them come and sign it as witnesses. And they were going to take that document and they were going to frame it and put it in their home. Now, during this whole process, as one guy is seeing this, he goes to the father of the bride and he says, you know, what I'm seeing here, it looks like these kids are pretty serious about this. And my first thought was, well, if you're not going to be serious about getting married, exactly what are you going to be serious about? It kind of makes sense. You know, I don't think too many of you hang your marriage certificate on the wall, but maybe that's not a bad idea. A reminder that we made this promise to one another. We made this commitment to one another, and it is indeed a serious commitment. Some of you may be old enough to remember the Beatles song, All You Need Is Love. I'll sing it for you. It had a pretty catchy tune. It's pretty popular at the time. Still has some popularity even now. The only problem is, what you think about in love songs, when you think about love, is this romantic kind of butterflies and rainbows kind of thing that comes along with love. Guess what? That's not all you need. Not if what we're talking about is this romantic kind of love, then in that instance, love isn't all you need. I mean, we'd like to believe that the feelings are just going to keep rolling on and on and on, and I'll always feel this mad, passionate desire for this person that I've married, my husband or my wife. We'd like to believe that. And listen, I don't think I've ever had a couple who stood before me to get married who did not claim to feel deeply, deeply in love with each other. But if all they needed was that love, that feeling, if that's all they needed, then quite frankly, they'd all still be married today. Because it started that way. I mean, I've never had a couple. I'm standing up and I'm doing the wedding ceremony. And, you know, one of them looks over the others. I'm doing this, but I really don't love you. You're going to get it when this thing's over with. No, listen, when they're getting married, they're looking in each other's eyes. Sometimes they're crying. Sometimes even the guy is crying. You know he's in trouble. They're crying. They got this big, you know, it's just all love all the time. It's a cool thing. But that is not all they need. Last week we mentioned a dogged determination. That's what's needed. That's what goes along with that love. That is commitment. It is a dogged determination that even when I'm not feeling like I'm loving you today, even when, you know, the feelings have waned and even when things aren't going right, you know, I made a commitment to you. Now, again, this has to be, we've said this before, this has to be a two-way street. It's hard to have a one-way commitment to somebody. They're committed, you're committed to them, but they're not committed to you. That's not the way God designed marriage to be, okay? But when you're entering into a relationship, we need to understand it's more than love. It is a commitment. And that's why as part of the wedding ceremony, I read from 1 Corinthians 13. Love always hopes. Love always trusts. Love always perseveres. Love never fails. I want you to hear me very carefully. It didn't say marriages never fail. It says love never fails. Sometimes we fail love. But love never fails. Romantic love, yes, that fizzles out. That fades away. But the kind of love that is in 1 Corinthians 13, the kind of love that God gives, that love never fails. But we are frail creatures of dust, and we fail that love all too often. It doesn't always end in divorce. Sometimes it just ends in arguments. Sometimes it just ends in, you know, sleeping in another room. But sometimes we fail that love. But love is a commitment. And that's one of the reasons why I recommend to every couple in premarriage counseling that they do exactly what Nancy and I did after we got married, and that is move to Texas. You think I'm joking, don't you? I think it's the greatest thing you could do is move to Texas. Unless there are people in Texas who actually know you and you got family there. You don't move there then. Maybe Montana or something else. And here's why. Because we moved to Texas. And I loved her and she loved me and, you know, happily ever after and all these wonderful things. But there comes a moment in your marriage where you recognize that maybe we're not seeing eye to eye. Maybe you've had some of these. And it can get to be a little tense, shall we say. Here's the deal. Living in Texas, nobody runs home to mama. Okay? You may go to the couch, but you don't go home to mama. And in the morning, you're both still there. And you look at each other and go, we got to figure this out. We got to work this out. I will let you know right now that there are people in your life, when you have problems, will try to get you to drop your spouse like a hot potato. There are people in your life who will not support your marriage and encourage you. I'm not talking about people that are saying, stick in there. He's beating you with a baseball bat. Just hang in there. It's going to get better. I'm not talking about that kind of thing. But I'm talking about people who aren't going to support you, aren't going to encourage you. You need to recognize those people. Make sure that you don't allow them to feed you, because they'll do it. Commitment. Marriage is a commitment. Secondly, marriage is a covenant. Marriage is a covenant. And there's a difference. And again, I script some scriptures in there, but you've got them right down there. You can take a look at that. Marriage is a covenant. So marriage is a commitment, but it's not just a contract, a promise that a couple makes to each other. It is a promise, a covenant that they make before God. So you're kind of dragging God into this now. It's not just me and you making a decision. Now we're doing this before God. We're making a covenant. We're making a commitment. Now, most of us don't deal with covenants very much. You may live in a subdivision or something, and there's a covenant you have to sign that says how long you'll leave your trash can out on the side of the road or how tall your grass has got to be. That's more of a contract. Let me tell you what a covenant means. If you go back all the way to the Hebrew word berith means to cut. And you go, well, what does that have to do with a covenant, to cut? Well, I'd like to explain that to you by actually drawing your attention all the way back to the book of Genesis. In Genesis 15, because there's an incident here that helps us to understand where the derivation of this word covenant out of to cut comes from. And here's what happens. Abraham was instructed by God. He said, bring me a heifer, a ram, a goat, each 3 years old, along with a dove and a young pigeon. And Abram brought these to him, cut them in two, and arranged the halves opposite each other. The birds, however, he did not cut in half. Now, here's what he's done. These animals, these large animals, he's got a cow, he's got a ram, he's got a goat. He brings them, he splits them in two. And then he lays the parts out on either side, kind of like an aisle, and lays the carcasses out on each side. And then that night, well, first of all, Abram spends the rest of the day chasing away buzzards. So it's not a whole lot different than Greene County. Okay, he's trying to get rid of the buzzards. At night, God puts Abram into a deep sleep, and Abram gets this vision of a representation of God passing through the pieces. Now, what's going on there? God is making a one-sided covenant with Abram. I'm going to do this regardless of what you do. I'm going to do this. But let me tell you what typically happened in the covenant process when this was done. One person wouldn't walk through together. Let's say Fred and I had a contract. We had an agreement. We had a covenant, a commitment, and we were bringing God into it. Here's what we'd be saying. Here's what would happen. We'd agree to it. We'd split the animal pieces apart, and then Fred and I would walk through those pieces together. And the symbolism of that would be this. What we're saying by that is, may God do to us what was done to these animals if I break this covenant. Wow. That pretty much seals the deal, doesn't it? That is showing just how serious this concept of covenant is, and how we come up with the idea of to cut, this walking between animal parts. And I got to thinking, wouldn't it make marriage ceremonies so much more interesting that instead of the bride and groom walking between, you know, down with rose petals on the side, maybe we had some animals split open and they walked down between them. And when I said, and now I pronounce you husband and wife, and may God do to you what we did to these animals if you ever break apart. Now you go, wow, do we want to be that serious about it? I see a couple of heads shaking. No, let's not do that. Well, I mean, it's kind of gross. You could have a barbecue afterwards, I guess. But what I'm trying to show you is that not all marriages work out, but we got to take marriage seriously. Does that make sense? Because marriage is a commitment that a couple makes to each other, and it's a covenant they make before God. Covenant, if we want to give a definition, covenant means a promise or a pledge to do something, but it's way more than a pinky promise. It's way more than a half-hearted pledge, something you do with your fingers crossed behind your back. Covenant is serious business. And Malachi, the prophet Malachi, lists that the breaking of the marriage covenant is one reason that God would not hear the prayers of the people. Listen to what he said in Malachi chapter 2. He said, another thing you do. He said, you flood the Lord's altar with tears. You weep and wail because he no longer looks with favor on your offerings or accepts them with pleasure from your hands. And you ask why? It is because the Lord is a witness between you and the wife of your youth. You have been unfaithful to her, though she is your partner, the wife of your marriage covenant. You made a covenant, and it's serious. And so what we see is marriage is a commitment, marriage is a covenant, and then thirdly, marriage is a witness. Now, this one may seem a little bit strange to you. The idea of covenant and commitment, they make sense. But what does it mean that marriage is a witness? Well, for us to understand that, we need to consider what the Apostle Paul wrote about marriage. And we're going to come back to this as we talk more specifically about husbands and wives later in the month. But let's take a look at Ephesians chapter 5, 25 to 33, a long passage, and don't get lost in it. It says, husbands, love your wives just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her to make her holy, cleansing her by washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle or any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated their body, their own body, but they fed and cared for their body, just as Christ does the church. For we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother and be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I'm talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. Paul makes it abundantly clear here that marriage among Christians is to be a reflection of Jesus' relationship with his bride, the church. Marriage among Christians is to be a reflection of Jesus' relationship with his bride, the church. Now, in what way does marriage point to Jesus and the church? Well, the hint comes from what we're told right after Paul says, this is a profound mystery. I'm talking about Christ and the church. It comes right before that. Paul says, and we've heard this over and over and over, Ephesians 5:31, quoting what God said in Genesis, for this reason a man will leave his father and mother, be united to his wife, and the two will become one flesh. In other words, the reason that we are to honor marriage and hold it in such high regard is not simply for the sake of our family's well-being, nor to create a stable society. We should esteem marriage because it is a picture to the world of the unity that exists between Jesus and his church. Jesus' great love for and commitment to his bride is the example of how marriage, the marriage relationship, was created to be. What are we saying here? What we're saying is how I respond to Nancy and how she responds to me, the example that we have as a married couple, affects our witness as believers in Jesus Christ. And the same holds true for you. If you're married, that relationship, if you're both believers. Now, if you're not Christians, listen, your relationship doesn't have any reflection on Jesus in the church. It just doesn't, because that's not what he's talking. He's talking to believers here. He said, listen, if you two are believers and you're married, then your relationship is to point people to Jesus by showing them the unity, the sacrifice, the love that exists in your relationship. When a marriage is a wreck, and when couples are speaking negatively and angrily about each other to other people out in public, when Christian spouses continually argue and withhold forgiveness and harbor bitterness, it says something to the world, not just about the condition of that relationship, but about Jesus and his church. My marriage, your marriage, every Christian marriage is part of our witness to the world. Now, you may be sitting here after hearing this and go, wow, I have blown it big time. And Pastor Jimmy just got up here to tell me all this stuff, and now I'm going to walk away just feeling absolutely miserable for a number of reasons. Number one, because I've not been as committed to my spouse as I should be. Number two, you know, this idea of a witness. Quite frankly, if people take a look at my marriage right now and they were to think about Jesus and the church, they'd get a really bad picture of what Jesus and the church, what that relationship is all about. I've blown it. I've damaged my Christian witness. What do I do now? I'd like to answer that question for you. It's two simple things. One, begin where you are now. That's always the best place to begin, isn't it? Begin where you are now. You've made mistakes. Maybe you're in a broken relationship right now. Maybe you've been divorced and remarried. I've discovered something. There's nothing I can do to go back and turn back the clock. Believe me, if I could, I would. When we brought out the marriage pictures, and by the way, thank you so much, everybody who brought wedding pictures to put out on the table. You have been a great source of laughter for a lot of people. And inspiration. And don't forget to take them with you today when you go. Any that are remaining, we'll take them back to the office and you can pick them up. And you have also been a great source of speculation. Who's that? And, of course, when people look at the picture, it's easy to identify Nancy in her picture, but people look at that and go, well, that must be her first husband. Actually, it is. It was me. And I look at that and go, you know, in a lot of ways, I wish I could turn back the clock. That somehow I could wake up tomorrow morning and be the guy in that picture. That I'd have to go out and buy new clothes, but that's okay. I could handle that. Wait for the thrift store to open. I'll be first in line. But not just physically, but decision making. If I could turn the clock back 10 years, 20 years, 30 years, you know, there are things that I'd do differently. Decisions that I'd make that I regret now, making these other decisions before. You can't go back and redo it. I don't care how many times you wish for it and go to bed at night dreaming that you're going to wake up 20 years ago. You can't go back and undo what's been done. And so you begin where you are, with all the mistakes and with all the victories, with all the bad decisions as well as all the good decisions. You begin where you are. And you go to God and you say, okay, God, here are the pieces. And I don't know how you can put something like this back together and make something beautiful out of it, God, because, look, most of what I've got here is ashes. And I've really made a ton of mistakes. But, God, I want to begin where I am, with all these broken pieces and all these bad mistakes. And here, God, Let's make something beautiful out of this. Do you know that there are artists who make a living turning things that are trash into treasures? Turning things that were broken and thrown away into things that are beautiful? There's a great heavenly artist that does that too. No matter the mistakes we've made in our relationships, no matter the mistakes we've made in our lives, God can take those broken pieces and burned up ashes and can make something beautiful out of them. And there's testimony after testimony after testimony after testimony in this very place that God can do that and will do that. So you begin where you are, and secondly, you begin today. When do we always want to begin something? Tomorrow, Monday. I'll do that next week. Begin today. Can you think of a better time to go to God with the broken pieces of your life? I mean, why wait till tomorrow? Because here's what happens. Jesus tells a story of a sower who sowed seeds, but some of it falls onto ground that not quite ready to receive it right now. It's a little too hard. And then the birds come and pick it up and take it away. And that's exactly what happens when we say, you know, I'll do this. I'll start this tomorrow. I'll make this decision tomorrow. I'll make this change tomorrow. I'll make this commitment tomorrow. The birds come and swoop in and take it away. And by tomorrow, it's just a faint memory. You begin where you are. And you begin today. And maybe you need to ask forgiveness of your spouse. Maybe there's something you need to go to your spouse and say, please, I am so sorry. I know how much I hurt you. And let me beg you not to preface your apology with, if I have done anything to hurt you. Okay, because what we're doing is we're leaving the back door open to say, You really aren't justified in your hurt. So if I've done anything to hurt you, that's kind of a halfway apology. That's what politicians do. You're not a politician, okay? You're a follower of Jesus Christ. And an apology, even if you don't feel like it was wrong, if Velma has hurt Glenn, to go to Glenn and say, if Glenn's hurting, and Velma goes to him and says, if I have done anything to hurt you, I'm sorry. Think about it this. To go to him and say, it's obvious you're hurt. And I've played part in that. And I'm sorry. You see a little difference there? You acknowledge you've hurt someone. You may not have meant to do it, but you acknowledge that you played part in their hurt and you apologize deeply for what you've done. Don't start with if. I'm begging you not to do that because I've done it before. I am the guinea pig. It does not work. It is not received, even if you meant it. It is not received well. So just acknowledge the other person's hurt and that you've had part in it and that you do regret and are deeply sorry for that. So if you need to go and ask forgiveness, do that. And listen, if you need to forgive your spouse, do that. Odds are pretty good that there's someone in here who's got something that they've just kind of tucked away and they're unwilling to forgive. That kind of stuff gets in the way. Begin where you are. Begin today. Let no bitter root grow up among you. Don't go to bed angry. That's biblical, by the way. If you need to apologize to your children, if you need to apologize to your parents, Maybe you need to apologize to your neighbors for the example that you have been, the negative example that you've been of what it means to be a follower of Jesus. Perhaps you need to apologize to someone in your small group. Maybe you need to apologize to someone at your place of business. You may not be able to fix everything. And believe me, an apology doesn't fix everything. But it's a start. It's a step in the right direction. And you can quit making it worse. That's the problem. When we carry unforgiveness, we just keep making it worse. It's like the hole we keep digging. And by going and with a heartfelt desire to reconcile that relationship, perhaps you can rebuild, begin to stop digging, and begin to refill it up. Now, does that mean every marriage is going to be restored? Does that mean every relationship is going to be repaired? I can tell you sadly, no. The old expression, it takes two to tango, is real. It takes two people to rebuild a relationship. But if you're committed and you honor the covenant that you made with God, if you're willing to work at it with dogged determination, and if you recognize that your marriage is more than just something between the two of you, it's a model of your Christian witness, then I think you can be amazed at what God can do with the two of you. Marriage is a gift. It's a gift to be cherished, a gift to be treasured. It is like so many other of God's gifts. It can be a thing of beauty. But you need to understand the greatest gift that God has ever given you is not your spouse. Sorry. The greatest gift God has ever given you is His Son, who offers you salvation, life, eternity. That's where you begin. Because again, until that relationship with God is right, I promise you, no other relationship can ever truly be right. For some of you today, you may need to begin by surrendering to Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior. Others of you may need a church home, a place of support, who can come around you and rally around you and build you up when life beats you down. And some may just need to come and pray. There may be some things you need to leave here at this altar and walk away without. Whatever it is that God leads you to do, today is the day. Start where you are.